Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode, it says 67 on our notes. I got a feeling it might be 68, you know.
Really? I'm going to check out now. I've got my phone in front of me, straight to iTunes, turn Wi-Fi back on, podcast app, which is the best way to listen, by the way. And the last one, Rig Special with Roger Bacon and Kieran Nash, was 66.
Oh, you are correct. Ah, I should not have doubted Paddy One. So hello and welcome to episode 67. Myself, Jamie Klosick, and Mark Watson is on his newly creaky chair, because it's only got creaky in the last couple of episodes, I've noticed. Is that your slender body started irritating it?
No, same chair. My ass must be getting bigger.
Yeah, mine's always creaked, but yours has got creaky now.
No, he's going to have to get some WD-40 action going on.
Yeah. We are sponsored by Clearwater Fisheries. Probably on the scene recently on the official Carpcast fan page. If you're not a member of that, then get over there and join up. You will see that Heapy Bob has been posting a load of stuff from there, and that's because we went up to visit Clearwater last week. It's a picture of me looking extremely grumpy on one of the pictures, but I was not grumpy. I was having a good day. It's just Heapy Bob just decided to pick the worst shot he possibly could in his new roles as social media managers for Clearwater and Carpcaster. He's getting the habit of taking multiple pictures of one shot and picking the best one instead of one photo and picking me pulling faces. So there we go. But Clearwater, wow, absolutely fantastic down there. We're going to be doing a Carpcast social on there probably in April. Not finalised the date yet. It's just a case of me picking one, but there will be one down there. We'll use both lakes. Well, there's quite a few lakes down there, but we'll be using the main lake and the runs water. Alex has spent absolute fortunes down there. There's pictures of the otter fence on me trying to get out on the thingy. I think he spent best part of 50 grand on the otter fence, I think 30 odd grand on the fence, and then 20 grand he's having to build a bund because of some land ownership issues, I think, and he's having to block the sort of shallows off at the end of the main lake, which will help the fishing generally. But the plans he's got down there are unreal. You need a session down there at some point, Mark.
Definitely. I'm always always on the lookout, and you haven't seen their pictures. You know, it's very, very tempting, and I've got to give them credit for that otter fence, because anyone who listened to the last episode, I had a bit of a rant about fences, and how some are good, some are great, and some ain't going to stop a Labrador, and the otters have got no chance on that one. It looks a proper job.
It's a proper job. It goes a couple of feet under the ground. It's one of the best fences I've ever seen. It's some sort of new technology as well. I think the first time that they'd use that particular one, the guy that was building it, he's just done it right, like really right, and quite rightly too. I think he spent somewhere close to 100k on fish stocks. They've all arrived over the winter. They're in various lakes at the minute. The sort of A team of the stock is being left alone for a year in one of the lakes and just being fed. And they'll be introduced into the main lake when they knock it through. They're knocking a couple of lakes into the main lake, creating a huge island at range. It's going to be one of the most perfect fisheries I've seen. You know, the way he's developing it is incredible, including the runs water. He's got plans to make that bigger, but just even the way they've built the swims, you know, they've kind of built double swims, but built them like so it's two single swims next to each other with a little bit joining them, but just kind of so that, you know, it doesn't, if you're not two people together, i.e. you know, dad and lad or two mates fishing, like, you can still use it as a double swim, or you can still use both swims without feeling that somebody, you know, a total stranger's in your swim, i.e. you pick somewhere, pick somewhere you can think with double swims, like Cromwell's a good example, because there's 3 points on there. The A1 point and Windy point, if there's a total stranger next to you, sometimes it feels a bit awkward. You can't, you know, sometimes people don't want to go that close to somebody they don't really know. Or might be somebody that snores really loudly. And this kind of, even though they're like, they're close enough to be a double swim, but they're kind of separate. So, you know, if you snore all night, it won't be quite so bad as if your babies are rubbing, rubbing nylon. But it's just the level of thought that's going into the whole development. The complex, amazing. Had a fantastic breakfast. The food's immense. There's plans long term for doing events on there, and the fishery is fantastic. There's a day ticket lake, or if you're lucky enough to get onto the lake, the main lake's going to be Syndicate. I mean, you can buy a year ticket now, but I think after next year, it's going to be completely Syndicate, and it will be in demand, very much in demand. I mean, there's already fish to well over £40 in there. It's over 10.30s as well, and the fish, I've seen the pictures of the fish that Alex has bought, and they are fantastic, stunning. So yeah, we'll be doing a Carpcast social on there in April. Was that your chair creaking, or a fart, or a sneeze?
it was another seat. I thought, because I'm sat now on like an office chair, which I'm kind of be as still as I can so I don't creak. And I've just pulled like a stool over from the other side of the room so I can put my coffee on there. So it's like got a soft cushion and I'm not banging it on the desk, and I just creak that instead. I just can't win. I'm just going to start rattling chains around it, make less noise.
I've got my headphones on, and for some reason I can't turn them down, and it's actually really loud to me. I've had to take one ear off because it's so loud, and that still was like, it was like, we'll never know with your backside. It could have been a fart, but
I do know when them coming, and I tend to mute myself to save embarrassment and your editing.
Any fishing this week, Mark? You done anything?
No, I'm pretty much catching up on, you know, chores and other bits and bobs and jobs and stuff, but it's nice to see there is one or two places waking up. And I've got to give a shout out to Curtis, the Saturday lad in our shop. He's had 420s already this year.
Has
up
he?
To £24. Yeah, he's only 18-year-old lad, mega keen. You know, I don't want to give him too much credit, like, but he's quite a talented young angler. You know, he's had him up to, from Good Park Lake and a local club lake. You know, 320s from the Park Lake up to 24 from the Club Lake, and he's on a roll. You know, he's getting a bit big-headed. He's offered me a tuition today, the little sod.
I've not fished since Christmas, but it's actually been quite mild in the northwest. Although obviously we've had high pressure, we've had some winds and rain and stuff. It's not been pleasant, but I'm doing the same as you, catching up on stuff. We've put a couple of Carpcast extras out this week, and there'll be two more out over this next coming week, maybe even one tomorrow. You may have noticed, some people have noticed already, that you can only listen to the 10 most recent episodes of the Carpcast now on iTunes. That will always be the case. The Carpcast will always be a free podcast, but it's costing money to store all the old episodes. In fact, everything costs money. I had prices quoted to get an app made, a Carpcast app, this week. What do you think, like, the low point and the high point of a quote like that might be, Mark?
I think there might be quite a lot of pound signs in it. Never actually gone down that route myself, but I've seen some of the comments on them, and they're not cheap, are they? 12, not for good.
No. We can have a cheap app that just mirrors, like, our website already, but that's kind of pointless. But yeah, to a native app that does stuff that we need it to do. The bottom end is about 12k and the top end's about 25.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot of money. But we have spoke about this before, but we do need to have something for our time on the Carpcast. And one of the ways of doing this is a model that a lot of other podcasts use, and that's they, you know, they give you the 10 most recent podcasts as free, and they'll always be free. You have the option to save those to your iPhone, iPad, or whatever as they come. But if you want to access the back catalogue, which is increasing all the time, obviously there's 66 episodes, or 67 episodes when this one's finished. And for us to maintain and keep doing it, then there needs to be some sort of revenue. So we'd like to encourage people to support us either at $4.99 a month or £35 per year, which will give you access to all the extra content, the extra bits that we produce. It'll give you unlimited access to all the back catalogue. And there's even a forum for extra members now in our www.thecarpcast.com website. And in future, if you want to ask us a listener's question, the only place we will receive that is in the forum. So basically, if you want some personal advice about a lake or you know, anything in anything specific, if you're not an extra member, if you're not a Carpcast member, then it's not going to get answered. We will, you know, always discuss the general stuff, but you know, if you want to pick our brains personally, then you need to be supporting the show in some way and need to be a member. So yeah, there's a listener's question page on our forum in there. Heapy Bob's a moderator. Have you had a look at it yet, Mark? Have you noticed it?
I've not. No, I'm gonna have to join up.
Oh, you're not a member. Unlucky. I'm pretty sure Reese has got your profile there. But yeah, there's a forum in there as well. We will be adding other stuff, articles, features, PDFs, you know, all the up-to-date gossip will be on that forum within the Carpcast website. So if you want access to all the back episodes, unlimited, and or if you just want to support the show, we do get messages from people that love the show, they're just finding the show. You want to support us and make sure that the show continues to happen. What, a year and a half we've been doing this for now?
A little over 2 years.
Oh, is it? Just over 2 years. Right. I mean, you know, it is time consuming. It does cost money. The hosting costs money. You know, I would like our own app at some point, and, you know, the cost of that is going to be well into five figures at some point. You know, even though you get it for free, if you would like it, if you enjoy it and you want it to maintain, then I suggest going to our website and signing up. Like I say, you can just pay $4.99 a month and it will support us, plus you get loads of extra bits and bat, including the two we released this week. There's a load of guest anglers on the Carpcast Extra this time. We've got is it three Ians? Ian McMillan,
Ian Russell, and Ian Chilcott.
Yeah, along with Lee Jackson, he's on there, and
Steve Briggs and Adam Penning.
And Adam Penning as well, yeah. And Ting Tong Stories, Ian McMillan's went down quite well this week, didn't they? So basically, yeah, the extra content we've got out at the minute, the final two parts of this second series will be finished over the next few days after you hear this. So yeah, go and check it out. Some pretty funny stories in there. And, they seem to be going down pretty well at the minute, don't they? So it's all good. But yeah, please do, we encourage you to support the Carpcast financially, and we'll continue to do it for another 2 years, hopefully. There are other ways as well. The Carpcast socials are a way we can keep it going. I also do coaching and tuition up at Clearwater Fisheries. You can find out everything on the Carpcast website, so yeah, go and check it out there. The weather market's been awful, hasn't it, with this high pressure, and I'm looking forward to going fishing. Obviously, we've been fishing down at Kevin Nash's place. They've been really cold. It's been one of the rare times that the north has been warmer than the south. It doesn't happen very often, does it? But, you know, minus fours and fives they've had down there over the last couple of weeks. Right? We've had like sixes to tens in the northwest. Hopefully, yeah. May get to Clearwater this week, actually. I won't mind. I've got a couple of meetings, one with an app developer, so I may well go over there one day next week if I can hook up with Alex. But you got any plans?
Well, I'm working Sunday. Well, I don't know where this is going out, but Sunday, well, two. I've got bloody physio on Monday, which pretty much screws that up. So I might get a day out on Tuesday somewhere. But nothing's final. I might stay in bed. I might go on the river with a couple of packs of maggots yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's one thing I've seen that has kind of got me interested, something that might surprise you as well.
Yeah.
Did you see Carp Talk last week?
I haven't read it. I did see the cover, I think.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, well, there's a story from the cover. There was a fella using one of these deeper fish finders. I think it was a 7-fish catch, you know, up to well into 30 pounds plus, after finding a bunch of fish by using his deeper fish finder.
We've had this technology talk so many times. A special guest on this show this week, as you'll have seen from the title, is Jim Davidson. Very much enjoyed talking to him, and I asked him this same question about technology, and he's like, yeah, I'm all for it. Spoiler alert, you can hear that in a bit, but like I'm a progressive type human being. I love advancements in technology, but I also enjoy fishing and, you know, having a skill edge on people that, you know, haven't got an underwater camera or you know, a drone going over to spot fish. But I've got to be honest, like when the Smartcasts first came out, which were, you know, probably the original version of the Deepers, you know, I do own one, but only I've never used it for this purpose. But, you know, I did think, like, in winter, when, like, you're trying to tip the scales in your favour, when fish aren't really showing. I mean, you know, if you took a lake like Christchurch or somewhere where you can walk all the way around the lake, you know, you don't need to cast more than 30 yards, so those deepers and the thingies work. You can find where those fish are grouped up in winter. There's a very good chance of catching a few, isn't there? But, you know, you've took the skill of seeing the fish, of seeing the bubbles or seeing one show or whatever. And where do we draw the lines? I mean, fish finders have been used in fishing for a lot of years now.
Yeah, well, let me give you this scenario. Say I've got down, you know, to a syndicate, quite a deep lake, you know, around 6 acres, and there's a little ripple on the water. You know, chances of fish showing are just minimal. Chances of you seeing that one show, even less. They're not going to bubble because in 18 foot of water, they're sat 12 foot off the bottom. And unless you get really lucky with your zigs in the right spot at the right depth, you're going to sit there for 2 nights, freezing your nudges off and not catch a thing. Yet, you cast one of these deepers off. I mean, this Pro Plus model, it's got a range of 100 yards and it will transmit straight back to your phone, which you attach to your rod with a nice little strap. You watch it with the app and, you know, 2 or 3 casts with that, and you can get all the information you need, and then you're going to catch a few. And what is wrong with that? I mean, I'm coming round now. I mean, I'm never going to buy a bait boat because they're still wrong, and I'll take the piss out of anyone who uses them. But I'm coming round to this technology sort of thing, because, I mean, you have called marker floats carp scarers in your writings in the past. This deeper does everything, you know, it gives you that information, it tells you, you know, what depth, you know, the contours, and any fish.
I'm torn. I think it's great. I'm completely torn with my morals, but, you know.
I'm just trying to convince myself that parting with 200 quid is worth it. I'm just going to have to then spend a lot of money on 300 pound braid so I don't crack it off and have to go for a swim.
What about marker float with a camera in it?
Same again. Interesting. Tempting.
I noticed Heapy Bob put one for sale up on his Northwest Buy and Sell page about an hour ago. 80 quid, I think it is. Something for the it's Fish Buy, is it? One of them.
Yeah, you get a Fish Buy, then there's... have you seen the Prologic one, the Water Wolf?
Yes.
That's not a float, it kind of like is part of your rig. It lays on the bottom and will film the fish mugging your rig off.
So I'm going to draw a line in the sand right now. If it's a physical thing you've done yourself, such as casting, you know, fishings with rod and line, so whether that be a marker float or casting out a camera or casting out a deeper or a smart cast or something, you're still casting it out into an area. Yes, it's reading something, but a marker float's reading something as well, you know, when you measure the depth and you know and you feel what the bottom is. So yeah, it's okay. When you start to get into drones, boats and remote stuff, then you're kind of not physically doing it yourself.
Yeah, I'm not really keen on the drone idea. And the first time I see one flying above a lake, you know, where I'm fishing, the throwing stick and some rock hard 20 mils are coming out.
Yeah, I'll get down with the deeper. So what's the story here? He's found the fish on the deeper and had a 7-fish hit in the middle of winter.
Yeah, basically. Mm. Would you not tell me you wouldn't do that if you had it at your disposal?
Yeah,
so would I. And you know what? I've said it before. There's one of the best anglers in the country, Simon Crowe. We know his views on technology. Use it.
Yeah. There is, I don't know, like the bit of fishing, the hunting bit, then there needs to be a manual element. So, you know, dropping rigs off in boats while I do it and have done it, you know, it's, if I was fishing, you know, a proper lake and nobody was using boats, I would not be using a boat. You know, I want to, but I'm doing that, but that's for my own personal reasons. I want to catch, you know, want to pit my wits against the fish. If I'm just going on Aldi or to a Runs Water and, you know, I want to enjoy my day's fishing. I'm not trying to prove anything to myself or to anyone else. And then, great, get it all out. So, but yeah, I think.
Yeah, the other thing I've considered, well, I've certainly not done because it's, I'll say now, it's totally against the rules. I was thinking about taking my dinghy down there and, you know, going out in the night with a lamping torch and shining it down the depths and seeing if I could find them.
That definitely works.
Frowned upon because it's against the rules and pretty irresponsible, to be honest.
Yes.
Cannot condone such actions that I thought of.
yeah, cool. I like it, and well done to the lad that caught those fish. I remember Roger having a really big hit, Roger Bacon, fishing Wire Lake in the northwest many years ago, having a hit in the middle of winter right out of the blue. I think he had 5 or 6 fish in a night, I think, overnight, including one of the A-team at the time, one of the top 3 fish, which was called the Big Lin, like 32. Still a picture of it up in the bar at Wyre now these days, I think. And that was just shows in winter sometimes when you do drop on them, you can get a hit. I mean, a five fish hit on there overnight was exceptional for any time of year, let alone January or February, whatever it was. And you know, that capture went down in history, but just goes to show, if you can find where they are, you will catch. So whether it's with a boat and a lamping torch, or, you know, whether it's a deeper fish finder or whatever it is, in winter, you know, it's generally so hard. If you can guarantee that you're on the fish via, you know, boat or echo sounder or deeper or whatever it is, then yeah, good luck to you. I think you deserve that little help just for being out and grinding it out, especially this winter when it's been awful.
Yeah, I think Calliomides is one of the deepest as well. I've seen him on videos using it, and the sort of fishing he does, where it's, you know, he's visiting a lake for the first time more often than not, it's saves a lot of time thrashing it around with a carp scarer.
And whatever company is behind Deeper, if you would like to send us one, send me a message. I'll give you my address, and I would love
give him my address, not yours.
I would love to, send us two. will certainly review them and tell everybody how good they actually are if they get me a 7-fish hit in the middle of winter when everything is crappy at the minute. I mean, I'm looking forward to getting back out. I'm looking forward to, I've noticed Steve Briggs this week's made a couple of posts, you know, summary things, reminiscing about the times you can get in the water without, you know, dying of hypothermia.
I need some Wim Hof breathing. You can live through cold.
Wim Hof, yeah, talking of Wim Hof is the ice man, as he's known. He's the guy that goes into sub-zero temperatures, swims under the ice so cold that his retinas freeze up, and he holds loads of world records, and pretty sure he went up Everest in just a pair of shorts and bare feet.
No, he did. He did have boots for that one.
Oh, did he?
But yeah, I think he got. He didn't get quite to the summit. He did his ankle in and had to come down. But he's actually taken groups of people to the summit of Kilimanjaro.
Wow, and he does it in a pair of shorts, nothing on his top, whatever. So, you know, sub-zero temperatures up there. And Bev Clifford's been getting into him. I believe she's got his book for Christmas. We are eagerly awaiting the cold shower recording from Bev. I'm hoping she'll do it at some point. But I did receive one this week from Carpcast listener Matt Wood. So I'm going to play it to you.
Well, Enjoying a lovely shower. Nice and warm. Right, here we go. Time to slip into the cold mode.
Apologies for that. For some reason, they all sound like a guy having an orgasm pretty much everyone. So in the interest of balance, Bev, get yours in quick so at least we can even it up a bit. But yeah,
oh, you want to hear Bev having an orgasm?
I didn't say that, Mark. Do not twist my words. I want to listen to, in fact, I don't know how long these ice showers are going to go on. They're a bit creepy, aren't they? So,
yeah, some of the pictures I got posted on the fan page of, to be honest, I don't need to see pictures of another man in the bath. Ever.
No, if you don't know what I'm talking about, have a look on the official Carpcast page.
Or don't.
Or don't, yeah. On the net, Mark, have you seen anything on the net this week?
It's on the net. It must be true.
There's one or two things. One thing I mentioned, I've not put it in the notes, but I've seen the Facebook live streaming thing.
Yeah,
I've seen the lads at Fox have been utilising it a bit.
Yeah,
quite surprised no other companies are really going for it, or not that I've noticed anyway. But I think Lewis Porter's had a go. I was sat watching one the other night. You had Harry Charrington. Talking about his fishing, answering questions, and it's quite good viewing, actually. When you think about it from a media marketing point of view, it's great. There's good engagement, and it's free.
Yes, fantastic. Obviously, if you remember in the very first episode of the Cartcast, we talked about live streaming and stuff. You know, this is before Facebook did it, live streaming from the bank. I don't know why more people aren't utilising it. There's no editing like YouTube content and stuff. And if you're doing anything interesting, then I hope to be doing quite a bit this year. I've got a lot of trips booked during the year, UK and abroad. Hope to be doing a fair bit of fishing. Some tuitions and stuff as well. We'll be doing plenty of live streaming from the Carpcast, thing.
Yes. Speaking of live streaming, have you seen how, because when you do this live streaming, it doesn't just, you watch it live and then it's gone, it's still there. And the video we did it back at Royston on the social, where you caught that fish on a ridiculously long zig, Alan Blair hoisted you up on his shoulders to make it easy to land. Have you seen how many views that clip's had now?
No, go on.
It's over 62,000.
Wow. That is a lot of views.
So it's great media and great way to get yourself across there.
There's never been, going back to technology, there's never been a time where content creation was so easy, from live streaming on Facebook to, YouTube stuff to podcasts like this. We as consumers can consume pretty much everything, whatever you're into, whether you're looking at your smartphone on the bank, and you're fishing, you're on a Google, I don't know, you can watch people tying Ronnie rigs to watch, just carp bites and runs and, it's there. It's never been easier to create content and there's so much of it out there. It's great. I'm all for it. And everybody utilise it.
Who the hell calls a rig a Ronnie rig?
The Ronnie rig. You know the Ronnie rig, don't you?
Yeah, I've seen it and I'm sure it works. It looks like its mechanics are sound, but Ronnie rig.
I'm assuming Ronnie invented it.
was it cray proof?
Yeah.
Ronnie and Reggie can't get there.
Yeah, it could be. That could be. I have no idea. If you know where the name Ronnie rig came from, I'm sure many of you do, then let us know. Something else on the net, Mark, I've seen Tarka, the big common, lives in the avenue alongside the 70-odd pounder. Came out at £60 And whatever you think about Rob Hales' waters, he's done a fantastic job of growing those fish. A 60 and a 70 in that lake. Wow.
Yeah, well done to the captor.
What was interesting, I saw on one of the posts, I can't remember if it was Crowy or Carp Talk or one of them, it was the UK's third 60-pound common. what are the other two?
Benson went 64 tops.
Yeah.
If you believe rumours, it actually beat Mary's record, and the captor didn't want to claim it because of all the fuss it would cause at the time. I don't know how true that is or not, but it is a common myth or rumour. And number three, I'm not sure. Is another one of Rob Hales' commons done 60?
I'm not sure. I am actually thinking of a couple of places now that very possibly... let's not open this can of worms now.
What about Nash's Cops Commons haven't gone 60, have they? I've seen pictures of one of them at 58, but
no.
Knocking on the door,
yeah, depending on weather this winter, you know, it could be me catching it. Obviously that's the fish we've been fishing for all winter.
Well, if you use a deeper, you'll find it.
Very true, very true. Something else on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, did you see Country File the other day?
Yes.
He mentioned Tarka. That's a nice segue into the real thing. The otters, they were covered on Country File again. Now, whenever Country File covers otters, you know, we're usually painted as the bad guys and otters as this great success story of how our rivers are flourishing and it can now support them, which we all know to be incorrect. But this was quite a balanced view put over this time. And the first person he spoke to was Simon Scott, who also was harvesting the fish from one of his stock ponds. And he was putting across quite well as well how we got obsessed, how we have such a love for carp. And now, you know, he's holding up several different types of carp, you know, from your linears to your fully scales, explaining how, you know, every fish is individual and how they grow to massive sizes. And, you know, also explaining some of the damage that otters can do and how he's stocked carp into a lake only for him to be, you know, slaughtered the next day. And, you know, also putting a value on the fish that, you know, I'm sure, you know, lots of non-anglers just wouldn't have realised just how much they cost. You know, a 20-pound carp is a lot of money.
You know, we've spoke about Country Fowl before, haven't they? Because they've actually gone the other way in the past. So it's good that there's been a balancing story, because, you know, the general public's view on otters is, oh, they're cute little creatures, you know. It's good to keep sharing on Facebook these pictures of carp ripped apart, because they do look gory, and, you know, with a, you know, when they've got chunks ripped out of them or stripped or whatever. And it's good to keep those all over social media. It's great that Country Fowl is it the most listened to program, watched program in the UK? It's in the top three anyway of you know, highest viewers. So to get coverage on Country Fowl is big, and obviously Mark Walsingham and Simon Scott did a fantastic job of putting the angler's point of view over, and I'm sure it's had an effect on people, you know, even just people that don't really have an opinion, that have gone, wow, I didn't realise there's people losing their businesses here and losing hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of fish. Like, I can relate to that, because, you know, I have a business and I couldn't afford to lose 100 grand. So, you know, even if it relates to people on that level, as opposed to you know, just letting them see the damage that's being done, even if it doesn't affect them personally, it's got to be a good thing. I think, you know, that the powers that be, people like Rob Hughes, you know, working for Sport England and having a role within you know, government bodies in angling, and everybody pushing towards this awareness, it is getting somewhere now. It definitely is, which can only be a good thing, even if it's fishery owners protecting their stocks. You know, we've spoke about the fences before. You've got the embryo project. I spoke to Danny Fairbrass this week, actually. Very briefly, yeah. He was on holiday in Miami, and I probably woke him up because I didn't know he was abroad, and it was 7 o'clock in the morning when he answered the phone over there. I only checked afterwards when he answered the phone, said he was away with his family. And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. And he was keen to get off the phone fairly quickly and did promise to speak to us in February. Yeah, it says he's aware of the Carpcast and how well received it is, which thank you, Danny. But yeah, I apologise if I did wear you up, because I suddenly thought afterwards, it was about midday here, and I suddenly thought, hang on, America's quite a few hours behind us. I'm really surprised.
5 hours.
Yeah, and I checked and it was 7 a.m. So many apologies, and we hope to have him on soon. Lee said he'll be on in February, so yeah, that's all good. But obviously Danny has the fence, you know, the embryo project where he's helping fence fisheries. There is money available from the government bodies now. It's the, I don't know if it's the EA or somebody sent me a message this week asking, actually I can't remember. I'm sure Rob Hughes mentioned it on the his previous Hughes News. We'll have him on again soon, we'll ask him again. But I think the money comes from the Angling Trust for that. I think they hold it, but there's been quite a bit of money put aside. It was like 400k, something like that, that you can apply for grants towards fencing, commercial fisheries, private fisheries, clubs, whatever. So I think it's great that the awareness is getting there, and the fact it was covered on Country File is obviously really good news.
Yeah, definitely. Just going back to fences, made me think, because you mentioned the figure that they spent up at Clearwater for the fence. Fences, they don't all have to cost that much. If you've got a small club or syndicate, it can be done, you know, a lot cheaper than that with good old fashioned work parties and elbow grease. So whatever your situation is with your lake, if you think you need a fence, you probably do. Just, you know, look into it and get it done, because the otters will do you if you don't.
Yeah, definitely. And the Clearwater one was high, because I think the actual fencing cost alone, without the, you know, the sculpting of the lake, but the actual fencing cost was about 35k, and it's over 60 acres of land they've fenced in. It's not like one lake, you know, there's a lot of land that they've fenced in there. So I mean, that's quite an excessive fence compared to you know, if you've got a 10 acre lake, it won't be anything like that. So moving on, I need to tell you about holidays. If you're looking to book a holiday this year, there's, especially if it's a family holiday, you want to keep the missus happy, maybe give her a swimming pool or a really nice farmhouse in France, somewhere you can take the kids with facilities, games and all sorts of stuff, then you need to check out vipcarpholidays.com. It's a Facebook group there as well, all the prices and availability, or you can just get in touch with the numbers or emails that are on the website. And then there's the River Lot in France, and it's a fantastic holiday down there. Jim Lightfoot, who owns it, is a very experienced foreign angler. He's been setting it up all winter, ready for it opening in April. I'll be heading down there myself at some point for a guided tour with Jim on his boat. But there's a villa that's beautiful, swimming pool in the garden, sleeps 8, plus you can obviously get a couple in bivvies on the lake if you want, so you could technically take 10 people there. It's very reasonably priced, the weather's fantastic most of the year round, because it's quite far in the south of France. You can have all the tackle and bait and stuff provided, so you can just fly out there with the family if you would like. There's 70 metres of private fishing bank. There's fish to £60 being caught in the area, catfish to 100. There's big zander, pike, perch, everything. It's absolutely full of fish, and it's a fantastic place to go. Also, there's Saint Armand, which is a farmhouse sleeping up to 10, double bedrooms, bathroom, satellite TV, table tennis, private 4.5 acre spring-fed lake that's absolutely stuffed full of carp and other small fish. So, you know, if you are taking the kids and family, they will be catching. You know, even if you want to give your kids their first ever fishing session, they are going to catch plenty of fish. You don't need to fish at nights, because there's so many carp to be caught in the day. There's well over a dozen 40-pound fish, up to 50-pound. And it's private and it's beautiful. It's the perfect type of holiday to take the family, the missus, or, you know, two couples, whatever. It's absolutely perfect for it. You can get it at vipcarpholidays.com. We also have a traditional big fish type French water as well, that you can hire privately, Cass on Lac. It's available all July and August this year if you fancy putting a group trip together. You and a few mates, this is absolutely perfect. Again, all the usual French facilities down there, isn't it? You know, there's a little bakers and all the things you imagine on a French holiday. The amenities are nearby, and it's a typical French big fish water. Just one other holiday to tell you about, because there are two places left on John McAllister's. Johnny Mack, who's been on the Carpcast a couple of times, him and I are running a trip to John's, is it called Etang de Bernier? It's, or Lake Bernier. It's only £350 for a week. It's in March, so it's before the lake opens to the general public on the 1st of April. The dates are the 11th to 18th of March. So six places gone. There's 8 places available, so there's 2 more. It's only £350, and you'll be going with me and John Mack. The fishing's looking ace. There's a decent bunch of lads booked on already. So it looks like being pretty good fun. It's a drive and survive. We'll all go on over there on our own. There's tons of new big fish gone in there. I mean, there's fish up to 64 in there already, and it's pretty well stocked. But if you've been following John Mack or their Proper Carp Baits page or any of their pages, you'll see that they've bought a load of big fish this winter from another lake. Dozens of 40s up to £50 that have gone in as new stock. You can drive around the lake, park behind the swims. You know, it's going to be really comfortable. We'll have a decent social on there as well. And if you want to come fishing with myself and John McAllister, he's hilarious, by the way. All the time, you'll know if you've listened to the previous Carpcast. And yeah, there's just two places left. It's only £350 for the week's fishing, March 11th to March 18th. You can pay a deposit there. It's £125 will secure your place, and you can do that in the Carpcast shop, www.thecarpcast.com. You can check out my tuition and stuff in there in the Carpcast shop, all the extra content, join up, pretty much everything you need to know is in there. So is it time to move on to the interview? I had great fun interviewing Jim Davidson. I'm 40 odd years old. When I was a teenager, this guy was a superstar. He was, you know, as big as Anton Deckard now. And he was a very keen angler. And then we got a chance to speak to him. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. So I'd like to welcome a legend, Mr. Jim Davidson, to the podcast. How are you this morning, this afternoon now, Jim?
Well, it's a lot to live up to, isn't it, being a legend? I don't know what that is. If you're called a legend just by being yourself, that's great, isn't it? A legend in the carp fishing world, I would say. That's pretty much well known.
You've made a lot of people laugh. I'm mid-40s, and I remember you being an absolute superstar on my TV when I was a kid. So, to me, you're a legend anyway, I think.
Thanks, mate. That's good. I'm a legend.
And I remember, I don't know if this story was exaggerated or if it was true or not, but when it was first appeared that you were into fishing, it was quite big news when I was a kid. I was a sort of a youngish teenager, maybe mid-teenagers, and I remember hearing stories about you being on Farlow's Lake with a mobile phone bigger than a box, you know, on the phone all day. Did you ever fish Farlow's? Is that ever true?
I can't remember, but I probably did, actually. And I probably did have one of those first mobile phones that come out. And that was always the great thing about carp fishing. You could do it and run a business at the same time, especially now with portable things and gizmos. You can have an office in your bivvy and work from the side of the lake, you know, and just stop every couple of hours to land another 30. Marvellous.
Maybe you need to teach me that side of it. But
I remember the first time I saw a carp angler. It was the opening day of the season, and we'd slept in a field behind the back of the island lake in Alton Kirby. And we went and we crept in and baited up the night before, and we were fishing for tench. And a man just come and stood behind me. Well, I say a man, I was probably 14, 15, and he was, I don't know, probably 20, so he was grown up to me. and he had this matte black 10-foot rod with a cork handle, and he just stood behind me and cast out a piece of floating crust out to the island. Took no notice of me, as if I didn't exist, and caught a fish and shouted out net, and someone come along and caught this carp. That was it for me. That was it. I left school immediately and managed to scrounge some money and bought a couple of 10-foot Abu Carp Masters or some other. I think they were a pound and a half Tesco. Fantastic. Off I went.
They were exactly my exactly the same as my first carp rods. Yeah, I remember them. Steve Jones.
It was like casting out a bit of spaghetti in your hand, it was, wasn't it? A bit of sort of overcooked spaghetti. But wonderful.
I had the same story in the early 80s with the 10-foot Abu carp rod as well, and fishing. We used to fish cat biscuits then, but same thing on the surface.
No. We used to use, I tell you what, I caught my, because when I was 16, I had a 21.5 out of Alton Kirby, which was the record for all about 10 minutes before Jerry Savage caught a 26. And what we used to do was anchor the old crust. So you get a bit of crust about the size of a cube, about an inch cube, and then you push it through one of those, push the hook through, straight on the hook with one of those V disgorgers and put a little twig or something under it. Yeah. And then you'd cast out and you'd have a little bomb on about 2 inches of nylon and a ring, a split ring that ran freely up your line. So what we were doing, really, it was the first ever invention of the zig rig. So you cast it out and you pull it down, you pull your bait under the water so your line tight, and then you let your bail arm off, and then you'd hope to God it hadn't come off, and then pop, it popped to the surface, and that was half the fun, like a Polaris missile. And of course, the great bit of fun was when all the old tufties used to come along to peck at your floating crust, you just pulled it back under the water. And it really confused the old tufties to hell. And that's how I caught my 21.5, when I thought, oh, well, there's this duck. And if I pull my bread under the water, it's going to come off. So I might as well catch a duck. I'm bored. And so as the duck took the bait, I struck. And out from the water came this huge fin like Moby Dick. And I had a 21.5.
Wow. There'll be people listening to this trying that method this weekend, I guarantee.
Yeah, well, honestly, it was the way. And then, of course, we thought, how do we stop the bread coming off? So we made this bread, unleavened bread, of just flour and water, and baked it. And it was like concrete, this stuff, and you managed to book a hook through it, and it would stay on forever, and we called it Gibbonson bread. Not only did it stay on, but you could spray it with paste or put a bit of cat food on the top or whatever. And when Mr. Coot came along, you could pull it under the water and keep pulling it under the water and drive him mad. And as soon as he turns his back on it, you'd let it pop up so he'd hear it and come back and pull it under again. So we'd have lots of coots in the psychiatric chair all afternoon thinking, I've got disappearing food here in front of me. Great fun.
It's I'm enjoying hearing you remember vividly like stories from 25, 30 years ago. It's when you hear about celebrities that are into fishing, you know, the pastime that lots of us geeks
they were the best days of my life, better days than anything in show business. I smelt permanently of kitty cat. I did. And there was always ground bait in the air and everything. Of course, we had to make our own landing net. None of us could afford heron bite detectors, so we made our own that kept going off incessantly everywhere. And we had them old camp beds that your mum used to have in your back garden. That I woke up one morning at Alton Kirby up to my waist in water where I'd slid off. And I was so tired, it didn't even wake me up. Loads of times. All these great things. And getting bits of polythene and wrapping it round your umbrella and putting it on with pegs.
Yeah,
fantastic.
The umbrellas, well, the bottoms of those bed chairs. I know the exact ones you mean. You were cool if you had the red or blue one, and I had the flowery one because that was all my mum had in the garden.
When I was 14, 15, I played drums in a pub in Woolwich, and on Saturday night I'd finish at 11 o'clock and I'd catch the 20 past 11 train to Dartford, and I'd walk with my rod bag, my fishing box, and that bed under my arm 3.5 miles to Alton Kirby. And I'd probably start fishing at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'd fish until the Sunday night when I had to play drums again. And it was the happiest days of my life. The smell of that lake as you turned up. Because you weren't allowed to night fish it, which made it even better.
Again, you're describing every single day of my fishing life. There were no rucksacks. It was a fishing box on the back, as you said. Yeah. You had the same gear, the bim line around the bottom of the bed chair sometimes that used to stick out the bottom of the brolly or adapter brolly.
And then when you did save up and buy some heron bite detectors with that little box that sat underneath, that wasn't good enough. You had to find the man to convert them, who put a little lamp like the forerunner of an LED in the front of the heron. And then had this box, like a sandwich box, that sat under your bed with a big long lead. These buzzers that used to vibrate you out of bed. We had one bloke called John Bunnett, who was in our carp study group. And he had a bell. Instead of a buzzer, he had a bell. And you could hear his bell going off all through the night. Hysterical.
So, I mean, it's great hearing you, as keen as probably everybody listening to this was. I mean, that one that you saw off the top, I mean, was that what made you from being a tench angler, a bream angler, just pleasure fishing into the excitement of
the one I saw when he took it off the top, and I used to go around and there'd be loads of times when I'd go to a swim next to me and there'd be these three carp rods on herons with their tops about 2 foot into the water with the bail arms open and a little bit of silver paper around the line, and this thing would be buzzing. And the line would be, you know, piddling off this reel. And the carp angler was nowhere about, probably in the pub. And I thought, this is what I call fishing. You don't have to sit there staring at a float till you go boss-eyed.
No, the old pub chuck. There's a fair few well-known fish been caught on the pub chuck over the years. Get back at half 11. Not that we're condoning that anymore.
Of course not. But I mean, it was all free line stuff there. The thought of putting a weight on there, because there was this myth that you can't catch carp unless you're absolutely precise and whatever. And the baits we were using, I mean, I started using bread and sausage mix. Sausage meat you buy, and then put sausage rusk in it, and then take the inside of a white loaf up and make this mush and put it round the hook, making sure you left a little gap at the bottom of the hook so it could pull through the bit of crust that you used as a sort of a hook stop. And now you'd whack this out with this old bendy rod. You'd throw it out the power of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it'd probably go 30 yards. You know, not looking for a bar or not looking for anywhere on the ground and not just slinging it out there.
It sounds like you were pretty up to date with the methods back then. Everything you're describing, it was pretty advanced sort of back in those days.
It was pretty advanced, especially the cat food. You know, chewy cat and common tag. And then we started adding aniseed, but you wouldn't. And so you'd speak in these hushed tones to only your mates. What did you catch it on? KK with A. KK with A. And then I left. I packed up carp fishing and went off to be famous. And so all that era of the boilie came in. And I didn't know how to make boilies, so I phoned up Jerry Savage, because I was famous and he was now a famous fisherman. So I called him up. You know, the bond of famous people like being Freemasons. And he told me. And then I went down to the school pool in Faversham, and I fished there with these like a paste instead of boiling them or anything. And then I met this guy, and we started to talk about using the hair rig, and that was it. And that was a nightmare, because we'd use about a pound and a half line to tie the hair on, and you know, with a peanut. Yeah. It was so finicky, but it worked a treat, and that was it. I always felt as if I was in one of the forerunners of carp fishing. I didn't spend enough time at the bank, but I was always sort of there in the know, and have now not got a clue really about rigs. I'd sling it out. Hope for the best.
So have you still got a passion? Are you still out regularly or as often as you can?
I haven't been for a while, to be honest with you. And I've still got me 11-foot carp rods, and I've or were they 12, I can't remember. But I've got a great set of Hutchinson 3.5 test curve 13 footers, of which, your readers will hate me for this, they're rigged up at the moment for pike fishing. So they can whack out a herring and a 3-ounce bomb about, you know, a mile. And I quite like the old pike. I don't like unhooking them. I'm frightened to death of them. Call in a roadie to do it. Let him get bitten. Yes. But I haven't been for a while. And to be honest, to motivate myself to go and do it is that's the hardest thing.
I don't know. I mean, you've had a life travelling for the years. I mean, I was, you know, in bands myself, and we used to do a lot of work for the forces. You know, I probably played every army and NATO base in Europe and England myself. So I used to follow you with interest, knowing you were a carp angler, knowing the work that you used to do in the forces. I never got on the bill with you, but my uncle's band did quite a lot. They were like a 60s band back in the day. But you used to go to like Belize, places like that, pretty well, you know, over towards the Falklands. And do you ever come across any sort of interesting fishing places? Did you have, obviously, you were keen back then?
In Belize, there's a river that runs just outside of Airport Camp in Belize City, and I always thought, what horrible beasties live in there, because foreign fish are ugly, aren't they? Poisonous and teeth and eyeballs. I thought they were like that. And of course, the Murrell River that runs through just outside of Port Stanley in the Falkland Islands is wonderful, and I'd really like to fish that because I can sort of cast a fly a bit now. And they say only fish for the sea trout in the Falklands in a month with an R in it. So there's a good tip.
Right, okay. Is that just because of the water temperatures?
No, just because they don't run up the rivers in months without an R in it, it's not worth fishing. So there you go. Anyone's going to the Falkland Islands on the Murrell River, don't go in August.
Okay. Have you ever done any, you know, weirder fishing, as we would call it? You've been up the River Nile on, or sort of holiday
fishing?
No,
none of that. The only time I went abroad to fish was Denmark for the television program. Me and Del from Faversham Club, we went out there and fished in a lake in Viborg for about 5 days and had 5 ton of bream and no carp. So, well, they filmed it and looked all right. Yeah. But I've never had a desire to go to France to fish. I don't know why. I just never think I've had the time to do it. And now when I go fishing, I'm lucky enough to be able to fish a couple of lakes. My mate's got a 10-acre lake with tons of small fish, so that's quite good fun.
Yeah.
And I also go and fish the Lakeside Country Club, where they play the darts. Bob Potter allows me to fish it in Davro. Davro is useless, by the way. I have to say that, useless. And there's a lot of fish there. I had 2 upper 30s out of there one morning.
Wow.
And that's an interesting... But again, the lake is whenever you go there, you think this is going to be great. And you sit there and you put your baits out. Crayfish. Drive you mad. So there's always something, isn't there?
Is that the one right at the back of the hotel? You can see it where you have breakfast in the morning. Yeah, I've seen a lot of big fish in there. We were... Obviously, you know, the lakeside fishing shows in the middle of winter normally, or March. Yeah. A couple of years ago, it was everywhere was frozen. That place wasn't. We had breakfast in the hotel in the morning. We just went out there to have a look. Didn't know there was any.
I know there's
carp.
A lot. It's nice to have a fish off the surface out there as well. Just stick the old rod over there. And the difficult thing is pulling the bait away from the smaller ones.
Yeah, but I couldn't believe it.
Then you catch one and then they all bugger off. And you think, oh, where are they gone? But the bigger fish I've had there have always been off the bottom on boilies.
I guess it's completely private, and it looked like it. There wasn't really any swims or anything, so it's...
He doesn't let anybody fish it now because someone fell in and died, I think. Oh, and he's very... Yeah, so there's no real swims or whatever. But he lets me go down there and fish it. And sometimes I do, and I like to walk around and see if I can take one off the surface with my old 11-foot rod I've got and a Avu 55 or Mitchell 300, I think I've got there on it. Something ridiculous. An old Cardinal. I was playing my old Cardinal that I had for ages for my sort of stalking rod. I caught a fish one day on that, and the rod snapped in half at the butt, and the handle fell off my Cardinal at the same time. Cast iron snapped in half. I thought, this is the fish from heaven. £7.
Well, at least you got it in.
Totally wrecked me fishing gear. £7. All right. Do you want to hear my ghost story about fishing?
Go on.
Me and Stookie, we went fishing on my mate's lake. And Stookie is a barbel fisherman. And I said, come and have these carp. They only go up to about 20, so he's going to be all right on his little barbel rods. But I thought, well, no, your tackle's a bit light. So I rigged him up one of my rods with a bait runner on it. And I put my 2 out, he put his 2 out. I said, now make sure that bait runner's on and everything. You know how to work that, don't you? Yeah, don't worry, son. So at night at 1 o'clock, after we'd had a bottle of wine and something to eat, I heard his buzzer go off, and I heard him come out of his bivvy, and I heard all this cursing and swearing and splashing. And both his rods had gone. Both. Off, nothing, gone, into the lake.
Yeah.
And so we thought, so we went home, come back the next morning, and we're looking around the lake, because one of his rods had a cork handle. And I thought, well, they've gone. How could 2 go? And it was complete mystery. And then my mate said, why don't you try trawling for it with your marker float? So I did. I cast out and I picked up a line. I swear to God. And he waded out and he got the, pulled the line in, and both rods came in that were tangled together, and a fish on the other end of about 8 pounds that had been dragging these two rods around the lake for the night. What had happened? He hadn't put the bait runner on. The fish had pulled the rod off the rest, and on its way over, it caught the other one as well. And I actually brought them back, saved both rods, and the fish wasn't too badly injured. So there you go, a happy ending. But we thought, he said to me, it's the creature from the Black Lagoon, son. I'm not fishing here anymore. I've never heard of two rods being pulled in. It was quite good fun.
It must have been a little bit weird. We, in one of the Carpcast episodes, we do have scary stories as a question. Yeah. You know, is there ever a time you've been actually scared on the bank? Either.
Yeah, I remember as a kid being around Alton Kirby on my own, no one there at all.
Yeah.
And that was a bit, I was probably about 17, so I wasn't that much of a kid. No, I've never really been scared. I fished one night at the lakeside of a night on my own. I thought, well, bugger this, I packed up and went home. I thought, you never know who's creeping about here.
Yeah, it feels a bit spooky. I like you as a kid was, you know, quite often in my early teens, and if you, especially if you're on a lake that didn't have night fishing or whatever, you're scared of the bailiff coming, and you're awake all night. Because in them days, it was more a survival exercise to get to morning as opposed to now.
It was, especially when you had no money and you had to eat the cat food. Food or bait, you know.
Yeah, cat food with breadcrumbs we used to use, but we never got down with the aniseed. That's
KK with A, dear boy. KK with A.
Yeah.
KK with MS. Maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Or vanilla. KK with V. Vanilla essence. Pineapple essence. All these things you used to put in cakes.
We had that was it. It was all cake ingredients at the time. We had the advanced, like my friend's dads and stuff, who were, you know, they were the secret guys that were you know, we used to just pick up tidbits from. We had boff and trough, which was, I found out years later, they wouldn't tell us at the time, but one of the guys worked in an ice cream factory, which is where the food industry gets most of the flavours from. And boff was berries of the forest, and trough was tropical fruits of the forest. And it took me years to find out that information.
That's great. That's good fun, isn't it? And also, the other thing is mixing up all these baits. Where do you buy casein and lactobulmin? Yeah. Where do you buy all this other stuff, you know? And now I still sometimes put MSG in my scatter baits, you know, in my little bucket of bait, monosodium glutamate. And you think, well, you know, we like it, but fish are totally different. I wouldn't eat worms, you know, so ridiculous. What we think is nice and a food attractant. You know, I said, why don't we put female carp hormones in some of the bait? And he said, well, you wanted to eat it, not shag it. And I thought, well this is, you know, it might be an attractant. All these little things that people work out. It's quite simple. Carp will eat anything. Just find where they are and catch one.
I've done all that. I've had my girlfriend mix the bowl of stinky bait for me, you know, and I've been making the boilies. Yeah. I've done the MSG because it's, you know, it's laced in China.
Oh, Mark, my mate, the builder, right, who's cynical about everything, he said, he came in a bait shop with me and we bought some of this squid, liquid, some squid stuff. And he said, now, do carp live in the sea? I said, no. So how do they know what a squid tastes like? So what is the point? And he did have a point, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, freshwater pike eat mackerel and sea fish, and
I know a lake that fish pike, and they won't take freshwater fish.
Really?
They'll take saltwater fish, yeah. They put a roach on or a small whatever. No, he said, don't bother with that, they won't take them. And so I thought, that's nonsense. And I didn't get any. I caught some on lamprey, and the rest I caught on herring.
It's weird, isn't it? Like you say, I mean, the carp, we almost treat them like humans with the bait, with the additives and the bits and bats. It's like, what? Maybe you're just right. Maybe it is that simple. They're just going to eat everything.
They eat anything that comes before them. They're stupid. They're like cows, aren't they? But I think it's location, location. I think I saw Nashy once pointing out on his lake how to find a little hole 2 foot, you know, a 2 foot hole in all the weed where you can put your bait all the time and that's where the carp will come along, their little feeding platform. And that's where you're going to catch them. I remember, you know, we had to put huge, big, thick leaders on our line to stop them getting, you know, cut to pieces on the bars in these gravel pits. And that was the thing, find out where the bars are. And yeah. That never occurred to any of us back in the 60s.
Although you mentioned school pool, which was a it was a circuit water down those parts. You fished any of the other sort of, you know, big fish waters back in the day in the 80s and 90s?
No, not really. I went down to, I was just Alton Kirby mad. I loved it. And no, I didn't really fish any of those big fish waters. I fished the school pool, never caught anything in it. Although my mate caught a fish called sheep. While we were fishing there, it was 38.5 pounds, and I took all the pictures of it and took the camera to get it developed. There was no film in it, so he was really pleased about that. Although we did get it on video, he's got a video of it, and it was a beautiful fish, and he knew exactly what fish it was even before he got her in, because he knew the stories about exactly how she behaved before she came to the net.
We've had Lee Jackson on the show a few times. He used to fish Horton Kirby and school pool.
I met Lee when he was a kid. He's a nice lad.
Yeah, he's obviously had the British record a few years later. Did you ever use your celebrity status to get hold of Rod Hutchinson or any of the sort of the legends of that era?
Yeah, I tried to. When I was sort of bump into him, being a celebrity, they know you, so they speak to you. I met Rod Hutchinson at a couple of places, and I told him I've got some of his 13-foot rods. Dead Chuffed Gibbonson I met. I don't, you know, Chris Tarrant's a good carp fisherman, you know.
Yeah, I fished his lake in Gloucestershire one time. He doesn't live there anymore, but he had a very pretty carp lake at the back of his house. I believe he does a lot of fly fishing these days, does he? A lot of sort of game.
I think he does a lot of salmon fishing. Him and Mike Osman, the other capital DJ, as he goes off and they go and catch salmon. And I live on the River Test now. My Test throws through my back garden.
Yeah,
and that's just those stupid trout things. You see it, you can catch it, can't you? Stupid thing.
Have you ever eat fish that you've caught?
Yeah, I'd eat trout, but they're stupid. But I couldn't cut one up. I don't like doing that because I've always loved fish. If it's not carp fishing, I've had tropical fish and marine fish. I just adore fish. I eat them, but I wouldn't eat freshwater fish. Stupid.
No.
Dog.
Yeah, and you definitely haven't tried carp then.
No, I wouldn't either.
No, they're not supposed to taste very nice, from what I hear, but it feels like a bit of sacrilege to it.
No, it'd be like eating poodle.
Yeah, and another cute pet, yeah. Although my missus doesn't think that carp look very nice. Everyone's like, oh, that's a nice one. Look at all the scales, and, you know, it's big, big, fully scaled. It's pretty. She went, why are they all ugly? You know.
Yeah, my missus says they're ugly, yeah.
Moving on to the work that you do, I know that you've always been involved with the forces, both working and in charities. I mean, what gave you first of all, what drove you to take an interest in it in the early days?
75 quid drove me to it, mate. 75 quid for 3 days' work in Northern Ireland in 1975 or 76. And I didn't even know anything about the Troubles or the politics of Northern Ireland. I just went out there to entertain the troops. I liked that. And then I got sent to Cyprus. First ever time I'd been abroad. Entertained the troops. I loved it. And then the Falklands War, et cetera, et cetera. And in the early 90s, I formed a charity called the British Forces Foundation. And that now supplies all the entertainment for British forces worldwide on behalf of the government. So that was good. So I left there once all that was set up and formed Care After Combat with Simon Weston and a special forces guy called Goose. And we look after veterans in the criminal justice system. Blokes that are in prison, that were veterans. We give them a mentor to plan their escape. No, plan that when they're released, we want to make sure they don't go back in, try and find them a job. A lot of guys are in prison because of making mistakes, you know, a lot of instant violence and alcohol. And we make sure they don't do that again. So that's what we do. It's been quite successful. And, of course, there's always a problem of raising money. And everybody says, if I give you a quid, how much of it goes to the veteran? Well, in our case, nothing, because it goes to the people that we pay to look after that veteran and keep him on the straight and narrow. And so fundraising is important for us. And we're not a sexy charity. We're veterans in prison. We're not. You know, we don't do laps of honour. You never see our guys. They just go back into society. And it started off where I took some of our guys that were out of Winchester prison and staying in our Silent Western house. We went fishing with the with Dave Coates and the boys, took our veterans fishing, and they were raising money for Help the Heroes, which they changed to Care After Combat. And I spoke to them and said, look, you know, there's a big industry of carp fishing out there that I was at the helm of, really, all those years ago.
Yeah.
And I said, I think the carp fishermen of Great Britain will love our charity. Because, yes, we all love veterans. And I'm sure fishermen of all kinds would support veterans. But there's something about our veterans that are different, because they're the bad boys. Mm. And we want them to be good boys. And the carp fishermen, let's face it, we're the special forces of fishing, aren't we, really? I mean, we look like SAS men. We smell like vagabonds. And we're used to living rough. So why not let the carp fishing industry have its own particular form of veteran to look after? And I thought that our guys, Care After Combat, would fit the bill. So what I wanted to do then is form a committee and form a group of people that would be able to help raise that money, raise the profile, but more than that, to decide where that amount of money goes. And let's hope we can use it for fishing to help the veterans, or we'll use it for something else. But it will be decided by carp fishermen. And that's where Carp After Combat was born.
I believe Rob Hughes is involved as well. Rob is probably, I'm sure you know, he's a former lawyer and works for the Angling Trust and, you know, basically the government. And he's probably the most logical and sound mind I've ever heard in fishing. So if he's involved with the committee, you can be sure.
He's a good guy. We had a meeting the other day, and it's all about awareness. But we're quite a new charity, and they say you don't see our guys on the television saying how wonderful we are, because they say, oh, is that criminal? Right. You know, burgle my house. But our idea is to stop him burgling houses anymore. And I just think the carp fishermen and our veterans go together hand in hand.
I love that. The carp anglers are the special forces of fishermen.
They are. They are. You ask any carp fisherman, what do you do? And they're all secret, aren't they? It's like saying to the SAS, where were you yesterday? What did you catch it on? Oh, sorry, mate. I can't tell you that. Yeah. What rig was it? My own personal rig, thank you. I don't divulge. It was KK with A, D, F, G, and E. And I used the philolopic rig with the turnover and the phalangle. Oh, yes. Off the bottom.
It must be tough, getting all serious for a minute, it must be tough for, you know, we have this group of guys that kind of give their life to the country, to protect the country. We train them to be killers, we train them to be apathetic to, you know, emotion as much as we can, and then we put them back into society and expect them to act normally, you know, when we've kind of deprogrammed, desensitized them to human life.
Well, yeah, there is a bit of that, but, you know, The majority of our armed forces have never seen combat. They've never fired their weapon in anger, probably most of them. But here's the deal. They're still in the armed forces. They're still prepared. They still go and do things. Even if they're not on the front line, the cutting edge with the infantry, you're still programmed how to live, and you've got a family around you. So let's say the army recruits from the Jeremy Kyle estate of Scroats somewhere in Peckham. And this young lad who's got a dysfunctional family joins the army for 5 or 6 years. And then he leaves the army, the only family he's ever had, and he goes back to Jeremy Carlsville in Peckham, and the people that he knew then that he was friends with are now totally alien to him, because they're not the people that he wants to be around. So this guy's in the wilderness, and some end up in the criminal justice system. We grab them and get them back on track.
Yeah, it sounds like a great cause, and I like it that you've had an affinity with fishing, and you've joined with the lads, the Carp After Combat boys, Dave Coates and stuff.
Yeah.
You've got an event coming up, I believe.
Yeah, down at Medway Valley Lakes. I'm going to fish it as well. I'm going to have 3 days there, although I've given my bivvy and my bed to one of the veterans, so I've got to go and scrounge some stuff, so I can imagine what I'll have. I'll probably be back to an umbrella and a bit of polythene round it with pegs again.
Well, Kevin Nash has a monthly slot on this show. He's the Carpcast biggest fan, and I don't want to speak.
Well, Nash has been very good to us. He's given us some stuff. They've been fantastic. All the carp fishing big boys, the industry that we have asked so far, have been great. They've donated stuff. and we're not going to use it for raffle prizes. We're not going to use it for stuff like that. We will some if we double up. But what we want to do is have a dozen kits ready to go in the Carp After Combat warehouse. There'll be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ready-made kits. Any veteran that wants to come out and come fishing with us can do so. They can join in our competitions, and you don't need any kit, and we'll give you instructions on how to do it. It's quite simple carp angling. Bung it out and read a book.
Or get on your phone there. Get on your phone the size of a briefcase.
Yeah, get on the phone with the size of a brief. Well, that was the batteries, wasn't it?
I remember, yeah.
The batteries behind in a trailer.
Yeah, you needed a wagon there or a carp porter these days just to carry it about. Yeah, I'm sure Kevin, after listening to this, he listens to every show. I'm sure he'll, if you haven't got a bed share for yourself, well, I'm sure Kevin, he'll help you out.
It's old Jimbo here, your old mother from years ago from the British Carp Study Group. And thank you for your help, mate. It makes a big difference. And I know it comes from the top. You've got a good load of people working here, but I know it comes from you. And it's personally, thanks a lot, mate. So all we need now is them nice Shimano people. So let me give them a message. Okay, that means thanks very much, obrigado, and please keep sending some new bait runners.
Anything else you need while we're at it? I'm sure there's somebody else.
Do you know, I've never used a big pit reel. I've got one on my spod rod. I've got a Hutchinson spod rod that's the same thickness as a broom handle. And about, I can throw out a whole milk churn as a spod with this, with 50-pound line, okay? And that has got one of them big, real, you know, them big, I can't get on with it at all. It's only got one handle. Nightmare. Yeah. I'm old-fashioned.
We used to make the big spots out of the washing up liquid bowls.
Did you?
Yeah, you just put darts flights in there. You could slit little holes for the fins, and you stick the darts flights in them and glue them in. And wash them out, obviously, because as we know.
You know, in the old days, never ground baited at all and never put out free offerings. I don't know why that was. Probably because we didn't have anybody for it all.
Yeah.
Ground bait was for match fishermen, wasn't it? The carp went like that, haven't it?
No, it's, we've since learned if you can stick 30 kilos of bait out in a well-stocked lake, then the fish, nobody, this is the thing, like, you know, even in the early boily days, you know, we'd buy a bag of Richworth boilies on my paper round money, and it'd last a month, because you put, like, you know, you catapult 10 boilies around your your hook bait, and that was it. Nobody used to put any bait in, or, you know, a few cubes of luncheon meat, or a few bowls of kitty cat powder.
And then I made a bait boat once. I made one before there was such a thing existed, and that was quite good. And because I thought it was just to take your bait out. But, I mean, I always thought, and I still do to this day, that when I've cast out my rod number one, it's tangled. And it's lying on the floor for 48 hours, tangled, or it's landed in a bean tin or something.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not going to catch any fish. But you stick that in a bait boat with tons of gear, perfect. Oh,
how did you make your bow then? Was it an actual radio controlled, or do you use some sort of floating device?
No, radio controlled boat. Yeah, it was like a little model boat, just like with a little man in it, little man that you went on Blackheath Ponds as a kid. And so I made this spring device, and some like a little square piece on a spring about 4 inches square, which you put the boilies on, which would continually roll off. So you had to sort of get them to put a little rim around it, and you press the button and it would catapult them. Ba-ding! You know, like a broadside over the side of the boat. It was quite good fun. But putting your bottom tackle in as well, I loved it.
We argue about technology and fishing quite a bit on this show, because now, you know, there's these radio-controlled submarines with cameras on them that go under the water, and, you know, drones, so you can go spotting fish with this on your iPad and screen.
Why not?
Are you down with all that? Make it
surround
easy.
The buggers, the scaly-backed kids. We're coming for you, carp, and we've got technology. Yeah, why not? Have some fun. Do you know, the idea about catching fish, all us carp fishermen, why don't we catch as many carp as you can roach? Is this because they're more roach or carp are more clever? No, they're just less carp. So you've got to sit there for hours upon hours upon hours fishing. Well, if you've got Mr. Submarine, you can have a little look where he is, right? Find out what time he eats. Just do 2 days recce, right? And then go get him.
Do you think
the precise use of bait?
Do you think part of carp fishing is it? I don't know when... when they used to catch them roach all day long, like after about the 30th one, you know, the challenge is not there. I think part of carp fishing is the blanking, is the...
Well, I sum this up by saying to this, I'm a Charlton Athletic supporter, right? Say no more. My old mate John Virgo was a Man United fan, and I said to him, John, don't you get fed up of winning? And he said, no. I don't know any carp fisherman that's fed up. Mind you, I remember down in Bisonwood one night when the fish were spawning to the left of us in the shallows, and they were coming out there and they were eating like pigs. And we must have had 18 fish one night, and in the end me and Del reeled our lines in so we could get some sleep.
Yeah.
So you think, oh no, not another fish. Oh God.
Yeah,
that's not normally the norm, is it?
No. I mean, I do draw the line at getting woke up every 20 minutes for 10 pounders, you know, after about the third one.
What do people call now? Because I make carp fishermen laugh when I'm fishing, right? And they say, did you just have a take? No, I said it was a line bite. What are the, not a liner. A line bite. Oh, I was a line bite. God, blimey, you're showing your age. It's like calling the radio a wireless. I said, actually, I do call the radio a wireless.
It's. I was having this conversation the other day with somebody on the show. I still call bite alarms buzzers because they used to buzz.
Yeah, I still call them buzzers.
Yeah.
Sometimes I call them optonics.
Optonics and buzzers, and lots of people just don't know what you're talking about in the sort of modern scene. You know, it's Delkims or Foxes now. People don't know how good
everyone's
they are.
Everyone's trying to find something new. So you walk along the bank. I remember all these fashionable things that you set your rod so low and you were fishing for what they call churners, where you leave your bail arms on. And they used to dig a hole so your handle of your reel could go round. They were that low to the ground. Absolute bollocks, wasn't it?
And if the bite was too quick and the reel handle kept spinning, as it did sometimes on mine, you used to get in a right mess if you got an absolute churner. Yeah, people will definitely, you know, the younger anglers will definitely not know what a churner is.
They won't know what a churner is. I remember my mate one night in bed, John McCarthy. This was going well back, the late 60s. And we were fishing at Alton Kirby in the Big Lake. And he was in bed, and this is what you heard from his buzzer. Neek, 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 neek. And he went out, and he got to it, and it stopped. And he stood over it for 2 minutes, went back to bed. Neek, 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 neek. Went out again, okay? Stood there. Once he realized it wasn't us messing around, he stayed there for a while and got this enormous run, as we used to call them, rather than a take. And he hit into this, and I watched his face in absolute joy as he hit into something. And watched his face turn to horror as his rod started to point skyward as he tried to stop a Canadian goose from flying to Canada with his floating crust. Fantastic. In the end, it snapped him off. So it was another one of those modern myths, you know. Flying fish, John, you know. We had another bloke down Bisonwood. Every club's got one. We used to get a little Alzi bomb about a quarter of an ounce and on our spare rod, me and Del, and this bloke, what did we call him, Blakey, we used to get into bed and he used to get a bit drunk. So what we did, we turned his, it wasn't a bivvy, it was an umbrella with a cover all around it. We turned his cover all around 180 degrees, so his zip is facing away from the lake. Right, and then we cast the line over him, and we give him this enormous run, and we watched the implant of him from the inside of his bivvy, you know, the shape of a human, like a Tom and Jerry, trying to get out of this non-existent zip. He's fumbling and cursing. In the end, he came out under it, with all his pots and pans and half his bed and his box. Of course, we made that. We were asleep. We knew nothing. He never mentioned it next morning. Anything in the night, Blakey? No. Liar.
I've seen that happen, and had it happen to myself. There's no more deflating feeling after, because it used to be absolute panic in those days. If you got a run, everything was chaos. It was nothing organised like we have now. You can have LED lights that come on in your swim when, you know, to light it up. You can see what you're doing. Usually it was it started off with your bed chair collapsing because them legs went so yeah, you moved bed chair collapsing.
You can't get out, your zip gets stuck. Yeah. Right, so then you learn, and then you've got no socks on because you're in a sleeping bag, and you get out and you're in a puddle. So we used to put moccasins on. Remember moccasins?
Yeah.
Red Indians, what we wore them with silver on the inside. Tin foil to stop your feet from freezing, and you'd wear them in bed, and you wear sort of chunky boots on the outside.
Yeah.
Oh, nightmare. We used to have pennies on a plate, right?
That's right,
John
yeah.
McCarthy, and you cast out, open your bail arm, you put a penny on top of your bail arm, and a tin plate, had to be a tin one,
yeah.
underneath for the drop, and you hear, bing! You switch your torch on, and there'd be all this line going off. It was magical. The Carp were playing their part in the magic. It was just absolute heaven. The stars and the smell of Alton Kirby, KKNA.
Yeah, the biscuit tins we used to save from Christmas. The only time you ever saw a tin in our house was the roses or the biscuits, whatever we got at Christmas time. So that we used to nick the lids, and that'd be go underneath your reel with the coin on top.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
It's so comfortable now fishing, but fishing's always been trendy. I mean, even then, like you said, with the reels and digging the holes and having the rods close to the ground, there was something about
spraying everything black. That was the thing.
You know, even then the releases, the Cardinal 55s as you had, and
yeah, and you'd put isotopes on the handles. So when you got a churn, it looked like bonfire night.
I never saw that one.
Like a Catherine wheel. Fantastic.
What is it about carp fishing where we've always been kind of at the, you know, it's been trend setting almost, is it? You know, fishing wasn't cool.
Special forces, mate. You think special forces? Who's got the best equipment in the British Army? Who's the most innovative? Who are the ones that really put the time in? The SAS, the SBS, the SR. Right. Carp fishermen. We're the elite, mate. Joined at the hip, us and the special forces.
Do the rest of the Army hate the special forces as well? Is there a bit
no,
of rivalry?
No, they don't. They like them. They look up to them. And really, at the end of the day, they're just soldiers. But a carp fisherman is a fisherman. I don't think you can be a good carp fisherman unless you've got fish sense, unless you have caught that roach. And I've caught pretty big fish of every species, so I'm pretty pleased with that.
Fantastic. Well, we've been 45 minutes reminiscing about the past, so I could
talk all day about it. I love it. I mean, I'm really passionate about it. You know, the old fishing. I want to get the rods out again now, but I think it's Mr. Park that will be getting me rather than Mr. Cyprinus Carpio.
You can hear the passion in your voice. You can, you know, I'm sure everybody will relate to this.
Listen, mate, all old men reminisce and they look back to when they were at their happiest, and that was Horton Kirby. And everyone used to get a run at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, just before the ice cream van went along the causeway and sounded its chimes. We always used to catch a fish and get surrounded by the whole of the lake would come round and see this 16-pound monster lying on the, look at that. You know, it was like being in the SAS. Fantastic.
It takes us back to primal man as well, doesn't it? The sort of hunting bit, even though it's comfy, you know, we've got sweet smelling boilies and electronic equipment, and you know, we sit there on the phone, on Facebook all day while we're waiting for that fish. But it's still
the preparation. You know, it's the preparation and it's the planning and the will to do it. But listen, I'll tell you what you could do while we're here. If anyone's listening that's got a couple of old 12-foot rods and some, because we keep updating our gear, your old gear's lying around nowhere. Don't flog it. Speak to Coatsy, speak to the Carp After Combat guys, or call Care After Combat 0300 343 0255, and let's donate this gear and let's get some of our blokes, you know, what better, come back from somewhere horrible and sit somewhere else horrible and fish. Marvellous.
That's a fantastic idea. The website is careaftercombat.org. I'm sure you can contact the guys on there. All your old gear. I'm the same. I've got a shed full of it. You know, I've got old rods. I normally give it to kids and stuff while I'm fishing. You know, if a lad shows interest, comes down and sees me, I'll make a bucket of stuff up for him and give it to him. But
that's great.
I think it's going to the forces now for the next couple of years.
That'd be great. And listen, it's just a loan. No one's going to have it, because as soon as those guys get themselves together, they'll go and buy their own stuff. They won't want any borrowed gear. You know what it's like. It's personal. So it'll be used for some other guy who wants to go fishing. And there's so much else to fishing. You learn about the weather. You learn about, you know, the British birds. You learn about the trees, the water, nature. And you're back out there, and it's you against beast.
Fishing saved a lot of people over the years. I know many people from that could have took a different path because of where they were born and, you know, the estates they were brought up on. And like you say, it gives you an appreciation. You know, it stopped me littering. Like, you know, I wouldn't think twice. As a kid, you buy your sweets from the van that stops at the end of the road and you rip the wrapper off, throw it on the floor. And as soon as you start fishing...
That's what I'm saying. It's similar to the forces, because what are we doing? We're like two old sergeants, you and I, sitting there talking about reminiscing and probably boring to death all the young carp fishermen. They don't want to know about that. They want to know about what's going on now, what's the rig, what's the stuff. It's the same with these old sergeants in the sergeant's mess and the young guys saying, for God's sake, shut up, you two. You've had your day. So that's what we do. Been good to talk to you, mate.
You too, Jim. I'll put all the links and stuff in the post underneath, so anybody who wants to help out and the events...
Anyone who wants to help, give them my number. They're always welcome to call me.
Fantastic. And the event is the 26th or 29th of May on Medway.
That's going to be great.
You're going to be there as well. So, we'll stick on the details.
Hopefully. You know what they're going to do? They're going to get some celebrity fishermen, like proper, you know, fishermen, famous fishermen. But then there's me. So someone can pay to fish with me. That'd be good. And that goes to the charity. But they've got to bring a bivvy and at least a four-ringed stove, because I eat like a pig.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time, Jim. And let's speak soon. Cheers, pal.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So a big thank you to Jim. He's obviously a comedian from times gone by, a very, very different era, but you can tell why he was so successful. He's just... some people are just natural entertainers, aren't they, in there? They make you laugh. He doesn't have to say much. I was chuckling. I think funny people are just like that, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to listening to this one.
Yes. Yeah.
And as I just said, is that the first guest we've had who's actually got their own Wikipedia page?
Yeah, I did Wikipedia him before I spoke to him. Although we didn't really. We just chatted about fishing. I mean, he was pretty clued up back in the day, and very clued up back in the day, and. I'm going to go down and see him at the event for the Carp After Combat, which is in April. I haven't got the page up at the minute, but we did mention it at the end of the podcast just there, at the end of the recording. Another dude that's worthy of checking out, actually. Saul runs a Scottish carp group. He's been very active up there. They've basically stocked all the waters in Scotland. They have lots and lots of fundraisers. And they've got Briggsy up there on the 8th of April. Go and have a look at the Scottish Carp Group page if you live anywhere within travelling distance and you'd like to see Steve Briggs. It's all in a good cause. They do some great work up there. Something to do if you want to go listen to Briggsy, one of the nicest guys in fishing, on the 8th of April. So yeah, go and check it out. If you Google Scottish Carp Group, you'll be able to find the event. We got any listeners questions, Mark?
Ask us a question.
Yeah, we've got a couple, and the first one, I have to apologise to the fellow who's asked it because I've not attached his name, but he asks, well, the thing is, I've been thinking about the fish. Do these creatures have allergies to baits and food we use? You know, i.e. boil these particles, etc., as we humans and animals do? And can allergies have the effect affect them that's different in ways? So I'm thinking carp do, or maybe I'm just being daft, but why not? So basically, do carp have allergies? if you get a cow that's lactose intolerant, that he's not going to be going for his milk proteins, is he?
I think certain carp have preferences. I mean, whether it's an allergy or not, I don't know. But carp definitely have preferences to smell. You know, some carp like sweet baits, some carp like fish meal baits. You know, I've noticed that over the years. And we speak a lot about doing your homework on a lake. You know, if you're targeting specific fish, then try and find out its habits, where, you know, areas it's been caught from, types of baits it's been caught from. And I've definitely come across fish that, you know, like fruit boilies and stuff, and I'm sure that varies with the time of year. I mean, we've always said, you know, why do higher tracks work and singles and stuff, or why does, you know, if you're not matching the hatch, but as was the method I fished as a kid, you tried to make everything look the same, you know, your hook bait look exactly the same as the bait you were feeding. Now we know that, you know, you can put a bright yellow pop-up on top of a bed of fish meals and the bright yellow pop-up would get picked up first. So maybe just a curiosity factor, but almost certainly there's preferences. You know, Heather the Leather out the Yateley car park used to like a red boilie. You know, whether that's the colour or whether that's the Robin Red that's used to colour it and they really like that additive, I don't know. You know, some people will only use baits with Robin Redding because they swear by it. So they definitely have preferences. I don't know about allergies. Do fish have allergies? Maybe another question for Simon Scott. It's about time we got him back, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, how would you know? How would the fish even know if it had an allergy?
Yeah,
you can't just talk to your doctor and get a blood test if you're a fish.
No, maybe it just doesn't like something. You know,
just
maybe
not to eat it again.
I mean, you don't really get random fish deaths, do you? They tend to happen in groups or at certain times of year, spawning time. You know, you don't just randomly have a fish pop up in the middle of winter that's, you know, generally healthy, just one in the pack, you know, mid-20, just floats up for no apparent reason. It rarely happens, you know, like, as if it's just eating a peanut and it's got a nut allergy, you know. Like, never really seen.
Tiger nut allergy.
Yeah, I bet there's a scientific reason for why they can't have allergies, actually. I can, because of the way their digestive system works or something, I don't know. Because they can eat bits of metal and just shit them straight out, can't they? I mean, you know, I'm pretty allergic to eating chunks of metal. You think of their filtration system, the crap they suck in and swallow by accident, you know, when they're feeding. You know, I've seen fish, I've seen rigs go down a fish's mouth and go through with a hook on it and pass out the other side. You know, they're very good at passing stuff through, so that's foreign bodies type thing. So I'm pretty sure they can deal with food items that don't agree with them pretty easily.
Yeah, I think this is one of those questions where we will never get a definitive answer, but even if we did, it wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference on our fishing or what we did, because, you know, as we humans, it is not everyone has allergies and all the allergies are different, so just carry on doing what you're doing and keep catching.
Yes, certainly. Have we got another one?
Yeah, and I have put the name of this one. This is from Dave Jones, who is fairly new to fishing. But the endless information has left me confused over baiting methods. I normally have a hook bait that is glugged to within an inch of its life and some free boilies scattered around it. I normally glug these also. Is this right, or am I making my freebies too appealing?
Ask us a question.
I see what he's getting at. So he's kind of saying, do you only want the hook bait more appealing than the rest of it?
Well, I think depends what his glug is and how strong his boilies are to start with, because you can. I mean, you know, as I was using the LA stuff last year, they are quite rich baits, and as was advised when the Key was first launched, you know, don't pile it in. It's a strong bait, and the fish, they can be attracted there. They'll be in the area. They might pick one or two up, but they might just not go down and really munch them until a lot of the attraction has worn off, till they have washed out a touch.
Yeah, I think glugs are different to flavourings, aren't they? There's a lot of ingredients that can go in a carp bait that are really productive, and then they become a repellent at a certain inclusion level. I think the way glugs have made...
Yeah. If it's a proper food bait glug, and then it's one of the ones, you know, like, you know, I'll just use an example, a popular one, the old CSL liquid. You can get away with a lot of that. If it's one of your more, I don't know, like your boilie dip, your... you know, synthetic sort of flavours, they have a ceiling level which you go above that and it is a repellent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any problem with glugs. I mean, fishing more liquids is something I do quite a bit of this year. I mean, I had a first year I ever used the Scopex squid, which was many years ago now, 12, 13 years ago. I glugged. It was Dave Levy that put me on the bait, and he was, you know, pouring liquid over everything. And for that year or two, and I had a great couple of years then, you know, catch wise, I was covering all bait. You know, all my hook baits were permanently soaking in some sort of food dip. You know, all my pop ups, everything were permanently in dips, and I was pouring, you know, half a tub of juice over my boilies in the bag, shaking them up, let them soak in a bit, and I like it the way, you know, as long as it's proper dips and, you know, it's dispersing in the water nicely, it's got to be just putting attraction. And we know how good a carp sense of smell is. I think it can only be a good thing. In the fact of I understand what Dave is saying here, like, should he be glugging his hook baits and his freebies, i.e. am I making him go for the freebies more than the hook bait, then I wouldn't worry about that too much. If you're putting so many freebies out that they might not get to your hook bait anyway, then you're probably overbaiting. But you know, if you're fairly new to fishing, I doubt you're fishing over 10 kilo bait or some sort of amount that, you know, would give the possibility of the fish not getting to your rig before it's at the rest of the bait or got full up or whatever. You're probably not using that amount of bait because carp can eat a lot. So I just wouldn't worry about that. It's not something I'd be concerning yourself about. Just create attraction in the area, the fish will come in and feed. So yeah, if you've been glugging anything up, then keep doing it, because I'm going to be doing a lot of that this year. Don't forget, if you want to ask a listener's question, the only place we're going to accept them in future is on the forum in the listener's question thread in the members area of the Carpcast website. So hopefully you will support the show. Hopefully you can either pay $4.99 a month or £35 a year and help maintain the Carpcast and keep it going. We would be very appreciative. Anything else, Mark?
Not that I can think off the top of my head. There's nothing else in the notes, unless you want to go completely off tangent, but we'll get told off again.
This is something, yeah, something that was kind of on the net, wasn't it? Too much non-fishing talk.
Yeah, and considering we've done it ever since episode, I don't know, about two or three, that is the first person who's actually mentioned it. So unless we get a lot more of them, we're going to carry on talking about whatever the hell we want.
I saw somebody get insulted today on the net by Get Trumped. So
Get Trumped.
Get Trumped is now an insult term. So, yes, Trump away. Go and get Trumped. We could go down the politics route if we were particularly interested in going really off tangent. But I reckon we can wrap this show up now, and that'll be it till next week.
Yeah, I think we can. Next time.
See you next time.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.